the podcast from Cambridge University Medical Education Group, or QMEG for short. This is a podcast from the University of Cambridge Clinical School, focusing on medical education. We will be touching on a range of topics that medical educators are dealing with. I'm your host, Cheryl France, head of QMEG. Today I'd like to introduce Dr. Elizabeth Fistein. Elizabeth runs the Medical Ethics and Law course at the University of Cambridge Clinical School. She also practices as a medical member of the First Tier Tribunal as an advocate for individuals with mental health concerns. Today, Elizabeth is going to be talking to us more about the medical and ethics course at the university and more generally about medical ethics. Welcome, Elizabeth. It's wonderful to have you with us today. Would I be correct in saying that your background is really interesting because not only are you a medical doctor, you're also a consultant psychiatrist, as well as having a law degree. Could you please tell us more about yourself, your background, and your current roles?
Well, it might just be that I'm addicted to collecting qualifications, but I think actually there's a real overlap between our work as doctors and the worlds of law, and also some other worlds, which we'll probably talk about over the course of this podcast. So particularly my work as a psychiatrist, I was aware from quite an early stage in my career that I was being asked to apply different parts of law and make clinico-legal decisions, as I think of them. So the law gives me certain powers, and I need to understand how to apply that law. And that got me really interested. And it isn't just as a psychiatrist. Even as quite a junior doctor, I was having to go round and seek people's consent for treatment. I was having to think about confidentiality when I was sharing information from people's notes to try and make sure their care was safe, or I was carrying out audits to try and make sure our service was operating to appropriate standards. So medicine and law, there's a big overlap, and that got me interested. And that's why I went off to law school, then came back to medicine, and I'd got the bug by then. So I did a master's in medical law and ethics, which got me very interested in the philosophical side of medical ethics. And I finished up with a doctorate looking at mental health law and ethics, which is how I then got into education.
Wow. I feel like an underachiever for sure. I can see with the overlap now. And it's interesting, you don't necessarily think of that as a doctor, we'd have to think so much about law and all the different aspects of that. So thank you. That's really helpful to paint that picture. And I can see where you would get the bug and want to know more. It's fascinating. Both topics are very fascinating in their own right. So to get to put them together, it must be really, really interesting and a wonderful opportunity.
Absolutely. I have a really interesting job, and it's fascinating thinking about how to explain these complexities to medical students so they're equipped with the skills to apply the law properly when they're going about their clinical duties after they qualify.
What an interesting background. I can understand wanting to dive into each of those subjects because they're clearly really interesting. It also sets you up really well with the combination of medical and legal background to help train our future doctors to understand more about the specific topic of medical ethics and law. Could you tell us more about what sort of topics are taught?
Sure. So here at Cambridge, our medical ethics and law course is a theme within our professionalism course. We call it our professional responsibilities course. And it's a theme that runs right through the clinical course here, the last 3 years of our students' training. There's five themes to the course. So I've already mentioned medical ethics and law. We have a theme around reflection, learning, and teaching. So that's about becoming a reflective practitioner, being able to be a lifelong learner by reflecting on experience, and also thinking about having the skills to be able to teach others. We've got a theme on medical leadership and management, so giving people the skills to take a leadership role within teams, or even as a junior member of a team, being able to step up and be a leader at times. So if you notice something needs to change, feeling confident to be able to be part of that change and even maybe lead that change despite being quite a junior member of the team. We've got a theme closely related about patient safety. So that's all about understanding, I guess, the insights of the safety industry and how they apply to medicine and how we make sure our services operate safely and patients don't come to harm while they're with us. And our fifth theme ties it all together, really. So our fifth theme is about multi-professional team working. It's about recognising medicine's a team game. We don't do it on our own. We're working with both other doctors in other specialties and also other colleagues, perhaps within our own specialty, but from slightly different professional backgrounds, nurses, pharmacists, physiotherapists, psychologists, occupational therapists, the list goes on and on. And we need to understand their roles, understand what we all bring to the game and how we can all work together for the benefit of our patients.
So those themes are really interesting and it's quite comprehensive and useful to understand a bit more because, again, sometimes I think when people are thinking of a doctor that they're in front of, they might think of them in isolation, but actually you're right. There's this massive team.
Absolutely.
That works together. So the students getting that opportunity to think through how you work as a team, how you work as a leader, how you stand up to different things. Yeah. I think that's really, really important. And also the reflection.
Yeah.
We can all use a bit more reflection in everything we do. So I think it's fantastic that there's an opportunity to just hone in that skill a little bit at the beginning, that it's a skill for life that everybody should be doing. So very useful. If you don't mind, I'd like to pick up a bit more on this professional responsibilities and thinking specifically about medical ethics and law, because obviously yeah. that's your specialism. So could you tell me a bit more about that specifically in terms of the course?
Absolutely, yeah. And I guess it's the oldest part of our professional responsibilities course. So I've been running it here in Cambridge since 2008, and it was previously developed by colleagues. So we've got quite a lot of experience, and we've tried a few things and honed the way we do it over the years. So I guess here's my approach to teaching medical ethics and law. And I mean, I've want to remain really mindful that I'm training doctors. I'm not trying to train philosophers or lawyers. So it's a very practically focused course. And it's about giving students, I guess, a skill set that they can use and a framework that they can use when they approach ethically challenging situations in their clinical practice. First of all, it's about recognising ethically challenging situations. So those are the kind of things where you're wondering, I can do it, but should I do it? That's the way I think about it. Or maybe situations where there's a conflict between two different principles or duties that we feel we ought to follow, or perhaps between the values of different people who are going to be affected by the decision. What's important to one person is not being taken into account by another person. So it's all about recognising all of that and then having a framework, a toolkit, if you like, that you can use to work through those situations. So we've developed a framework here that we use, and we use it throughout the course, no matter what area of medical ethics and law we're thinking about. And I have to pay tribute to my colleague, Dr. Helen Manson here. She originally developed this framework in her work as ethics and law lead at Dundee University Medical School. But Helen's now moved to Cambridge and we've been working together quite closely. She's been involved in teaching the course here. And she's also leading ethics and law at the new Anglia Ruskin University Medical School. So it's good to work with colleagues and share ideas. But then more recently, during the pandemic, we realised that probably all doctors need a framework that they can pick up and use quite easily when they're faced with a new ethical dilemma, as so many of us were at the start of the pandemic. So what we've got is our ABC of core values framework. and we teach students in a ABC kind of algorithm. It's a bit like resuscitation, where everyone knows their ABC, airways, breathing, circulation. So our A is about acquiring and assessing all the information that you need to make your decision. And that can be about the clinical evidence, what's going to work for this patient. It can be about this particular patient's prognosis. And it can also be about what's important to this patient. What do we need to be focusing on for them as an individual? And at that point, we also tell us to stop and assess your own gut reaction. Can be useful to know. It can be useful to make sure you're open to changing your mind. And also, it can be a way of checking your own biases and seeing whether they're influencing your decision making. So B is about balancing. And that's about really using deliberative reasoning skills. And this is the core of what we're trying to teach our students. So it's about thinking, what are my professional obligations? So that's the C in our core values framework. It's about codes of conduct, things that I need to do because I'm a doctor. The R in core values is all about the law. So R stands for regulations, and it's all about our legal obligations. What does the law tell us we have to do in this situation, or tell us we absolutely mustn't do in this situation? E stands for ethical principles. And quite often with medical students, we'll be starting off by thinking about the very famous four principles of medical ethics that were developed by Beecham and Childress at Georgetown University in Washington and are used very widely across the world as a framework for thinking practically about how to manage ethical problems in clinical practice. So it's all about balancing respect for our patients' autonomy, our duty to do good, which we sometimes call beneficence, our duty to avoid harming our patients, which we sometimes call non-maleficence. And you can see how maybe that fits in with other themes of the course, like our patient safety course. And our duty to act justly, so the principle of justice, which is all about treating people fairly. So that might be not treating the patient in front of us differently to the way we treat other people, unless there's a good reason for doing so. So don't discriminate against people because of their personal characteristics, but do respond to different needs that different people have. And it's also about treating everybody in society fairly. So thinking about how we allocate resources, be that money, or often, as doctors, it's our time and how we distribute that amongst our different patients. So those are our ethical principles. That's our E in core values. And the values part, and I think this really adds something to our teaching, is thinking about how we are aware of our own values, our colleagues' values, and most importantly, our patients' values, and we shape our decision making around that. So we draw on the work of Bill Fulford, who's a doctor and philosopher, and has developed something called values-based medicine, which is a counterpart to evidence-based medicine, which most people have heard of. And it's a way of technically thinking, a skill set for noticing when there's a space between the values of one person and another, and using our communication skills to really try and to find a point of agreement and being able to develop a course of action that everyone can live with, even if it's not everybody's ideal course of action. Because sometimes there's irresolvable conflict, so we have to reach a compromise. So that's B, a balancing process. And then C is all about checking. So you've got to where you think you're going, but we stop and check. We ask ourselves, what are the costs of this course of action? Are they acceptable? We ask ourselves, are we being consistent in our decision making? So I think that's desirable. So if someone comes to our hospital, they can be fairly happy that they're not going to get a different decision from a different doctor on a different day. We're all going to approach things in a broadly similar way. And also think about what a critic might say, a reasonable, fair-minded critic. What would they have to say about our decision? And do we have an answer to that? And I think that C stage, that checking stage, is really important because it just makes sure we've made a decision that we can stand by. And it's good for the students because it gives them a step that means they can go home and sleep at night after they've made the decision. And most importantly, it's good for the patients because it means we've stopped, we've thought, we're confident that we're making a justifiable decision. So in summary, it's all about using this framework to make justifiable decisions and to make reasoned decisions that have been thought through rather than just acting on our gut reactions.
Yeah, and that seems to make sense. Mm-hmm. You know, having those principles, those values, and the stages that you can think through things, and yeah. The students always having that kind of in their back pocket and yeah. thinking that through with every patient, it does make sense and gives them a good foundation. But also something that, as you mentioned, if you're in the hospital, everybody's going by that. Yeah. So there's a consistency, as you said, that's going on there, which is really useful for everybody to understand that we're all on the same playing field. Yeah. But I think it's also just important to remind the patients that everybody's on the same playing field, you know, so there is that consistency that goes on there. You did mention about people having different values and perhaps looking at somebody in front of them and are they going to treat patient X the same as patient Y? And I know lately we've been talking a lot more about unconscious bias, and that's not just in the medical profession, that's throughout society. Yeah. I think we've got issues with unconscious bias. I presume this course is a good way of helping to consider unconscious bias. Do you explicitly talk about some of this and how a new junior doctor might think about that when they're looking at a patient in front of them?
Absolutely. I think this is really important. I think this is an ethical duty as a doctor to try and be aware of your conscious biases and your unconscious biases.
Absolutely, yes.
But often it's well-meaning people with unconscious biases that do a lot of damage. So we do talk about this quite explicitly in the course in a number of places. Having covered the basics of medical ethics in year four of our course, that's our first clinical year, we talk about consent and confidentiality. We talk a bit about research ethics, professional regulation, and think about end-of-life care. And already there, we're beginning to think about the importance of not making unwarranted assumptions about someone's quality of life just because of their level of disability. So that's, we begin to introduce those ideas there. We have a session on intercultural learning in the second clinical year, and we focus quite a lot on thinking about unconscious bias there and encourage our students as part of their training, as part of their ethical duties as developing professionals, to go away and take some implicit assumption tests so that they're aware of any unconscious bias that they may have.
Well, I bet that's quite interesting. I bet that's quite eye-opening.
I think it can be. I think it can be quite challenging to realise that you have an unconscious bias. And that needs careful handling as an educator. So there needs to be a lot of explanation around that, that these are biases that we pick up unwittingly from the society around us. And actually, many of us wouldn't want to have these biases in our decision making. So it's good to be aware of them so that you can stop and check yourself, because they tend to come out more when you're decision making in a hurry. So that's why having frameworks that have a bit of a stop and check step are really helpful. Another thing we talk about with our students is looking after yourself and noticing, am I hungry? Am I angry? Am I late? Am I tired? And if so, you got to halt and take a bit of time about your decision making, because those are the times when the biases might come through. And the other thing we do is we talk a little bit about the academic side of this. So there is some really excellent research on how people might perceive people from different groups, different ethnic groups, for example, and how that might impact on their decision making. So some people might be perceived as more dangerous or more of a threat than others. So in our session where we look at mental health law and ethics, we're very explicit in discussing that and how it's really important not to let that kind of bias influence your decision making, because that can have a real effect on people and who gets hospitalised and who doesn't.
That is really interesting, and I can imagine eye-opening for so many of the students as you go through. And it's good to point out those issues in a safe environment before they're out with the patients, and then having that framework to just keep checking back on.
Yeah.
And you mentioned different year groups that you're approaching. So am I correct in understanding that these topics get revisited?
Absolutely. So we're a course that kind of weaves its way through the whole 3 years of the clinical course. So in contrast to maybe some of the clinical specialties where students will do a placement and then perhaps not see so many people of that patient group throughout the rest of their course. That's not the whole story, because we've got students going into A&E, going into primary care in the community. So there is a bit of spread, but with a core of that clinical specialty, maybe one placement. We do things a little bit differently. So we're one of the longitudinal parts of the course that run right through the 3 years. And I guess we try to develop our students' skills alongside their development of their clinical skills. We're trying to develop their professionalism skills, as it were. So their first year, we're giving them some basic principles, and we're thinking about things that apply across all patient groups. So I already mentioned this is the year we talk about things like consent and confidentiality. They're going to apply whatever kind of doctor you become. And then in the second clinical year, we're starting to look at perhaps special patient populations where there are special considerations. So I've already mentioned we talk about intercultural learning, and that's partly because this is a year when a lot of our students go and undertake a global health elective. So they might go and experience work in a culture that they're unused to. But equally, UK, like many other places around the world, is now a multicultural society. We live in a global world. So wherever you practice, you're going to be encountering people from other cultures. There will be intercultural encounters. And that's an opportunity for learning and growth for our students. It's also potentially a source of challenge in terms of thinking about your ethical practice and different values. So year five, we're also looking at working with children and young people and any particular challenges in ethics and law around that. We're looking about people who are affected by any form of mental ill health or indeed intellectual or developmental disability. And then we're also looking at reproduction and pregnancy and some of the ethical and legal issues arise in the care of people who are hoping to become pregnant, hoping not to become pregnant, or who are pregnant. And there are all sorts of interesting questions to discuss around that. And we wrap it all up in the last clinical year, just thinking about resource allocation and justice, and thinking about defensible practice. So we're really preparing our students to move into practice now. They've got a lot of clinical skills. So we're thinking about how you ensure your practice is at the appropriate standard. There's no negligence in your practice. And when things go wrong, how you fulfill your duty of candor. So this is all about how we're transparent with people about what's happened. And you probably, again, see some links there between our ethics and law course and some of those other themes within our professional responsibilities course that I've spoken about. It all very closely interlinked.
It really is. and thank you. That was a really comprehensive picture of what happens throughout and what exposure the students get. I think you've spoken about so many different aspects of it. Could you give us an example of an example of something that a new doctor might come across and how they would apply those skills to become to an answer. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. So there are issues that arise every day in our clinical lives. And they're also the big headline issues. So the things that make the news. So in the UK over the last few years, there were a lot of big headline cases about whether tiny babies who were very ill should have palliative care or should have more intensive treatments. So there's big headline issues. Clearly, ethical issues and legal issues, or the big headline issues at the start of the pandemic that were faced in many countries about, you know, what do we do if the need for ventilators begins to overwhelm our actual availability of ventilators? Who gets a ventilator? But as a junior doctor, you're probably not going to be making those big decisions. But there's a lot of everyday ethics. For this person in front of me, who's saying they don't want a particular treatment, how far should I go to try to sell the treatment to them? How to persuade them, because I think it's a good idea, they should have it? Or how far should I stand back and let the person make their own mind up? So that's kind of an everyday decision that we're all grappling with every day. So there's a whole scale. So what we try to do with our students is make at their training as realistic as possible. So we get them to imagine themselves in these kind of scenarios, starting with the smaller ones and then building up as their skills develop. And we try to design scenarios that feel true to us as a teaching course for our practice here. So often these are things that we've encountered ourselves or we know colleagues have encountered. So we might start off with something really simple, like you're a junior doctor, your consultants asked you to go and obtain consent for surgery from a patient, and you've seen that operation done once. You're wondering whether it's the right thing to do to go and take consent from that patient. And we can talk then about what you need to be able to do to be able to have a dialogue around the operation with that patient, answer their questions, and obtain legally valid consent. So there's all sorts of things that arise out of discussing that scenario. So we'll prime the students with some knowledge, we'll give them some reading, we'll give them a lecture presentation, and then we'll get them into small groups discussing a scenario like that and seeing how they can use our ABC core values framework to apply what they've learned about this particular topic to this particular scenario. And I think that's nice because it reflects the way we make ethical decisions in the real world. We don't tend to make them on our own. We make them in discussion with colleagues. And there's a certain skill to reasoning through something in discussion with colleagues, which I think is really important to practice. So that's why I feel this kind of group work supported by a practicing clinician who does this kind of thing in their day-to-day life, using a framework to give people some scaffolding is a really good way of helping our students develop these skills. Students seem to enjoy it.
Well, I can imagine, and I think it's useful, again, to have that practice and a safe environment in which they can use those core values again.
Yeah.
So it makes perfect sense. So thank you. Those examples are really useful as well. And we do hear about the headlines, but there's a lot of thought that goes behind them. And I don't think everybody always thinks about that information that's going into it from behind the scenes.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, does this theories and the ethics and law apply internationally? But the answer is yes, because you've already given examples of the different stages of thinking that would apply around the world.
Well, yeah, I think they do. I mean, obviously, every different jurisdiction, every different country's got its own laws. So wherever you're practicing, you've got to be aware of the legal framework where you're practicing. I mean, we've got that even here in the UK, because the law in England and Wales is slightly different to the law in Scotland, slightly different to the law in Northern Ireland. And our students might go and practice in any of the three jurisdictions in the UK. So I've got to be slightly mindful about that. And my approach is I want to give students skills so they know how to go and find out what the legal framework where they're working is, and they've got an idea about how to apply it. So there's a lot about principles as well as about the specifics. It would be a very dull course, I think, if I just went through, this is what the law says you have to do in this situation here. And it might not be much use for our students because they're going to go and practice all over the world. So I want to equip them with skills that are going to work all over the world. There's an interesting question about ethics, whether that varies, because there is real, I guess, cultural variation in the emphasis that we put on principles like respect for autonomy, say. We're going to take a very, I guess, individual approach to autonomy in, I guess, countries like the UK, the USA, Australia, and perhaps in the Global East, for example, there's less emphasis on the individual and perhaps more on the family. There, I think it's really interesting to work with colleagues from those places to get that understanding. So I love doing that. I incorporate it into our teaching. So we've had some really interesting conversations with colleagues from Hong Kong, with colleagues from Karachi and Pakistan, and we've been able to do that in front of our students so they can see us discussing what's the same and what's a little bit different in those different cultural contexts. And I think you can use the framework in any cultural context, but perhaps the emphasis that you put on different parts of it might be different.
And that makes sense. You know, We do have different ways of approaching things in different parts of the world. So It does make sense, and interesting that students get that opportunity to see the differences, have those conversations, so they recognize they can have those conversations with colleagues, particularly if a patient in front of them is from a different culture who may have more of a family decision making scheme. That's important to be aware of that as part of the core values that you spoke about.
Absolutely. And we talk about having a high inquiry, high advocacy framework for those kind of situations. So we want our students to be really curious about where other people are coming from, but also be really willing to talk about where they're coming from as well, and hopefully find an interesting meeting point in between the two.
Absolutely. Wow, this has been really insightful and very interesting to learn so much about the course, and I want to take this course. It sounds really fascinating to learn more and to really explore those issues.
Yeah.
I think from my perspective, we've covered so much. I wouldn't be able to pick the top three. So I'm going to ask you, could you kind of pick the top three takeaway points for listeners today?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things I think is important is giving students a toolkit, giving them some basic skills that they can use to make justifiable, reasoned decisions rather than relying on their gut instinct. And they can build on that throughout their career, but a basic toolkit is what you need when you go out into clinical practice. So a framework and scaffolding, I think, is really important. Also, my second top tip is make it really practically applicable. So you've got to be constantly thinking about the kind of scenarios that students are going to be encountering in clinical practice and make sure they're able to take their toolkit, take their framework, and apply it to real practical scenarios. And then I think it's about also integrating with my colleagues teaching different clinical topics or different parts of the course. So working very closely with my palliative care colleagues when we're running sessions on ethics at the end of life. In fact, we run that as a completely joint session between our ethics and law course and our palliative care course. Similarly, when we're talking about resource allocation, we run that as a very integrated session with my colleagues teaching the public health course. So that helps with our practical application and our clinical focus. And then I guess my last thing really is about giving students confidence to go out and make a difference. So to really see themselves as agents of change, and that runs through the whole of the professional responsibility course, we want our students to be able to go out, spot things maybe where there might be a patient safety issue, and feel absolutely empowered to speak up and let someone know. And also to really feel empowered to get involved in quality improvement and maybe lead some positive change in local health systems. And I think students really enjoy that, because then they feel they're an active member of the team. They're learning actively. They're really involved. So it's good for them. But it's also, it's an army of bright, enthusiastic people that we can put out in our local health services who can help and who can make a difference, who can speak up if they see something that's not right, and then know that they can come back to us and be supported so that we can work with them to put it right.
Excellent summary. Thank you. And I like ending on make a difference. Yeah. I think that's a really positive way forward, is that we can all make a difference. So
absolutely,
that's really helpful. Elizabeth, thank you once again for such an interesting discussion. If listeners are interested in learning more about how to teach or improve their own medical ethics and law course, please contact us via the QMEG website. You will also find other podcasts on the website at www.cumeg.cam.ac.uk, or look for us wherever you get your podcasts. We are grateful to you, our listeners. Thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedules to listen to us today. If you would like to hear more from our series, please like and subscribe to our podcast. Are you interested in learning more about the electives program? In our next podcast, we will be speaking with Dr. Jonathan Fold to learn more about the electives program at the University of Cambridge Clinical School. We look forward to you joining us next time.